thought of the camera first.
Nope. If I put it there, it should make stereo. I should be able to be on one side. You should be on the
other.
Yeah. Here we go. Well, I wanted to ask some questions about where you were born.
What details?
When I was down in Mosul, I realised that I didn't know. I mean, I knew where the old house was, but I don't know why your family came to Mosul in the first place. What can you tell me about what your, for example, your father, where he came from?
My ancestors, apart from my father, I don't really know very far back in my very previous generations, because all my grandparents on both sides of the family were dead before I was born. But my grandfather, my father's father came from the St. Just area. He was a tradesman in that area, and then he came to Mosul. He married a Mosul girl. He came there to live, and started off in working for a fellow by the same surname of Grenfell. I don't really know where that Grenfell came from originally, but
so his name was Grenfell. His Grenfell, and he worked as well, for Grenfell, yes, but he wasn't related.
My father worked with him,
but he wasn't related to him.
Well, no relation, but later in life, this previous owner caught a complaint and died, and the business was up for sale. So my father bought it from their people of concern, and he set up a business there and carried on from there. But my mother's people, they were from further towards the Land's End Peninsula that way, and she used to come to Mosul visiting an aunt of hers who was a sister to her mother, and she came to visit quite often, and they lived right off to the workshops, because my father and her kind of set up a relationship like that, they got married. But as I say, from their side of the family, I don't know much about them really, because she was the only girl out of about 6 or 7 in the family, and they were all distributed all over the place. You know, our ancestry really is not all that strong.
So where did she grow up?
Well, I think she grew up in Cornwall, really. I got a feeling she was born in Kent somewhere.
No,
she was born in Cornwall. I think they went to, I think they were born in Cornwall. She was born in Cornwall, and then they went to Kent for a while, and then they came back to Cornwall, and she came back there and married my father. You know, but I don't think they did away all that.
You don't know where she lived.
I knew she used to live at near Simberian, a place called Trevedwin, near Simberian. That's on the road between Fort Village and Land's End. About 4 miles from Fort Village. And her father and all the family more or less reared in that area. And of course, my father's people, they had more connections in Mosul than my mother did, really, because his father, my grandfather, married a Mosul lady called Katie Harvey, and she had relatives there, cousins and uncles and that, you know, which I've never had to meet him because he was dead and gone before.
But your father was born in St. Just.
My grandfather was from St. Just. My mother and father, my father rather, was born and bred in Mosul.
Your father was born in
Mosul? Born and bred in Mosul, yes.
Your father was
but
born
my
in
grandfather came from St. Just area.
Ah. So if your father was born and bred in Mosul, where did he live?
Oh, he lived where Willie used to live.
He was brought up in the house.
I'm sorry. He was born and bred. I don't know whether you know the area. It's an area called Mill Pond Street, and it leads from where you go to the back of the village, where Billy Irish's chip shop used to be, and you walk straight along a little narrow road. It brings you out to where you went one time, Virgin Cottage.
Yeah.
Well, along there, that's Mill Pond.
That's Cuckoo Cottage.
Yeah. But he lived further along towards Billy Harvest premises.
In one of those areas?
One of the marriages there, he born there. And then when he got married, of course, he went to live in Cray Street. But all the family, I think, was born there, you know, all his brothers.
So the grand, yeah.
And my father, let's say he had relatives on his side, but there wasn't many of my mother's people in Marisol because they were all distributed around, you know. And there was outposts and that, there were sea captains, things like that, that, you know, sailed the seven seas. And one of them used to keep the ship in for years, and when he retired, he became the landlord of the ship in.
But your grandfather owned that shop, the workshop.
Originally, yes. Yeah,
he did.
Yeah.
So your grandfather owned
that. My grandfather owned the business, yeah.
And you said that shop was built at the same time as the new pier.
Well, that shop was built previous to my grandfather owning it. The previous man owned it. Now, whether he was the first owner, I don't honestly know. I do know when my grandfather came there, he went to work for this family, and there was a family called Grandfather.
He must have had a bit of money to have bought a shop there, I think, in those days.
Yeah.
It's not a bit unusual, isn't it, someone to be able to buy a shop like that?
My mother's people, my father's people, my father lost his mother when he was 5 years of age. And my father was the eldest of the family. And
What was her maiden name?
What was he?
Your grandmother's maiden name?
Harvey. Katie Harvey. And
what was the name of your grandfather?
Your father's, I don't honestly know. On the Harvey side, I don't honestly
know. Your father's father.
I know that once there's a Penrose in the family somewhere, whether my father's name is William Penrose Grenfell. I've got to be in my mother's family, that Penrose was on my grandmother's her original name, you know, before they married my grandfather. I don't know, see, I never met them, and I never got into it really. Mm-hmm. I got a feeling that she may have been her surname, or her parents, her mother's name, might have been, prior to marriage, Penrose, you know, son of Penrose.
So when your father just inherited that shop then?
Yes, he inherited that shop. And then he lived in the house before he died, he lived there, and the party...
So he moved in there when he got married?
He moved in there as a tenant to start with, and then the landlord died, and they put the property up for sale. So he bought the house. And the workshop, that was owned by a private landlord. But when my father took over the premises, he sold it to my dad. He sold it to my father then. So my father, I've heard him say that he had the house and the workshop more or less the same time. You know, the both of them was up for sale. It was either buy the house or get out, sort of thing.
And was the house in the flat above? Those were
That belonged to the same landlord all the way along, apparently.
So he bought
them, now, apparently, that cottage and next door where George Quick lived, and the cottage above, all belonged to one family. Had two brothers are married there. Two brothers called Quick, Edward Quick, and they were living there in two or three generations. And if you remember the old black door that used to be at the back entrance, in there is stenciled in with a heated brand, somebody's name, or cut out Edward G. Quick, and that was the original son of the original owner, I think. But they lived there for years, and where George Quick just lived there, it was his grandparents that lived there. It was handed down to his father handed down to him. And next door was the Quicks. That lady, that lady, she was a Quick, but she married a Pezzik that was Kitty Pezik's grandparents on her father's side. Her father's name was George Pezik, and he was the son of this woman that used to live as a maiden, Paul Quick, in the little cottage. And of course, he changed her name to Pezik. And
what relative was Kitty Pezik to you?
Kitty Pezik to me was the first cousin.
So she was the.
She was the daughter of my father's sister. Yeah, and her name was Katie. And Kitty Pezik was really his Catherine Mary. That was after the same line as I was from my grandparents, my grandmother on my father's side.
And what was the relative, like Ellen on the farm, what was the relative?
Now that was on their mother's side. Ellen was the niece of my mother. Ellen was the daughter of my
Joseph.
Mother's
brother.
The third brother, the third generation down of my mother's family. Mother's family was one of the elders called Harold, next one called Edwin, and next one called Joseph, and that was Ellen's father.
Didn't your grandfather have any brothers or sisters?
Not that I know of. I've never been.
Or your father? Did your father have any brothers?
My father had a brother, yeah.
So his name was Grenfell.
His name was Abednego Harvey Grenfell. The Harvey was in the game, called Abednego Harvey Grenfell.
So what happened to him? Where did he
live? He was living in Mansell in business with my father, my grandfather, you did that with. And then he went to America. He went
huh?
To
Do you remember Bendigo?
Was that your father's brother?
Yeah.
He was a bit strange with him.
Yeah. Well, that was because of the war. He went a bit in the Air Force during the war.
So he didn't have any family?
No. What happened?
His
marriage broke up.
Pushed off and left him, didn't she?
Well, his marriage broke up. He went in the war, in the Royal Flying Corps, as you would call it then. And then when the war was over, he went to America. And while he was in America, he got injured in the First World War. He was injured to the head. And that upset his mental ability, right? And then, although he could do a day's work all right, he was a little bit laddie, you know? And he went to America, and then his wife started to have trouble with her, and he'd come home, and their marriage broke up. And he went to live with my Aunt Katie, that was Kitty's mother. He went to live with his sister Katie. And
his sister,
mother was called Katie.
Was the sister of his father-in-law, William Grenfell, and Bendigo Grenfell. That was two brothers and a sister.
Oh, there were three of them. There was two brothers and a sister.
Yeah, Bendigo was the last. In fact, Bendigo lost his mother at the day he was born. She lost her life when she had childbirth. She lost her life.
And my father was the eldest.
My eldest was five. I was 5 years of age then, and his father was in business, he had no time to look after family, so an old aunt there, I forget what her name was, no, I don't recall her aunt, I don't know what her name was now, an old Victorian type lady she was, and she looked after these children, and my grandfather never married again. He carried on the business, but he never got married again. And Katie, his daughter, she got married and went to live in otherwise. And Bendigo, he went to live with her when the grandfather died and the old auntie died. There was no one to look after very much. He went to live with Katie because George Pezik, my uncle George Pezik, he was a man that spent a lot of time abroad. He used to do yachting. He used to go around the Mediterranean and gentlemen's yachts. You and the crew on the yacht, you know. He used to fish during the winter and go off during the summer all down around Naples. Places like that around the Mediterranean, and that's the sort of life he led. You know, he was a seafarer, really. So when he was gone, my auntie Katie was left with two small children then, Kitty and her brother, Douglas. And he used to, well, my father more took it on his own self, really, no one ever asked him. He kind of was guardian to them, he used to look after all their interests, like, and see whatever, and any trouble, he'd come and see the sort of out for them, you know, look after these children, and the man, the sister, like. And Bendigo, he moved in with her and started, like,
where
would
that they live? Where did they live?
Poor old Bendigo wasn't much good, really, was he, after the war, after his injury?
No,
he was,
no.
You know.
Where did he go?
He was odd, wasn't he?
He was in, just in France, wasn't he, or something?
Well, he difficult to know what the clothes were, what it happened, really, because he could do it day three. He was a good tradesman, he was a first-class tradesman, really. But he would, when his marriage broke up, he would be working in the shop, and all of a sudden he'd disappear.
Yeah.
And they wondered where he'd gone, trying to find him up chasing her up, trying to catch up where his wife was, things like that, you know. And then he got, then he used to talk to himself, you know, he wouldn't put all the conversation. He would wander off. He started off quite sensible. In fact, he was a brighter personality than my father, to be honest. He was a brighter man. And, but he
got the subject,
he got the subject,
yeah,
he wandered off on a line, you know. And he tended at one stage in his life, he tended to be like, well, an irreligious maniac, but that's what he grew up in biblical subjects, you know, he used to go off like someone put something out of the Bible, things like that.
The First World War, I mean, the Air Force, they were sort of a new thing, weren't they, Air Force?
Where he just started out of the army,
right?
Up, really. Sort of. Is that what he was in? Was he?
Yeah, when they started the Air Force, they brought them out of the army and put them in the Air Force, like, you know, they started the Air Force. And what happened with he got hit with a propeller.
Was he?
Yeah. But he was still starting with their hand then, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody knows electrical charges.
There wasn't an accident in the sky, like, or a
No. He was over in America. That was in America.
Can you remember what year your father was born?
I don't know. Well, I know what time he died.
Not
what time he died.
When did he die? It was 19.
Well, I got the Bible up there, but I don't know.
When was it, though? It was about 60.
Oh, quite a while, isn't it?
63, 64, something like that, he died?
When?
I said, when did he die?
Could I have looked at the Bible for that?
I can get the Bible in a minute, shall I?
Yeah.
But he must, if he died.
He was 85 when he died, I know.
Must have been 1880, something like that, mustn't it?
Oh, yeah.
It's been 1880.
Yeah, it must have been, yeah. Because he and my father, they both could remember the Boer War. I've heard my mother talk of times when the relief of Mafeking, when Baden-Powell laid siege of Mafeking in the days of the Boer War. My mother said that she could remember it quite vividly. There was no virus then. And like that.
Were they more or less the same age?
Yeah, I think they were about the same age, yeah.
So they were both born in the 1880s?
Yeah. I've heard my mother say she was living on the farm, and of course there's no newspapers in those days very much. No other reporters were there because of the news. And he came back from the used to go to Penzance for a market, and he came home and said the news in town that the Vatican had been relieved.
Willie used to have in his house a picture of the old house, an old house.
Yeah, well that was where my mother lived near St. Bergen, a place called Trevedwin.
Was that the village?
It was a farmstead, a continuum of about five different farms, all in the community, like, you know. Five different farms, all in the
that's where she was born and brought up.
That was where she was born, yeah. That's where Joseph was born, I think. I don't know where the other two brothers are. I think they were born there, I think so.
But your father was actually born in Mousel.
Yeah, he was born in Mousel.
So he was born not very far from Grenfell Place, in fact.
But we were the only Grenfells in the village. You never had any other Grenfell there. There was one bloke there, his name was John Grenfell Harvey. But that was the only Grenfell that was in there all the time I was there. And we could never trace any relationship at all, nor the ancestry in there. But of course, as I say, my father himself came from St. Just, and my mother.
Your grandfather came from St.
My grandfather came from St. Just. And my grandmother's people.
That's a great book, Mike.
There you go. This book was presented to Bertha Grenfell by her father, James Price.
I think that was about the time she was married, I got a feeling.
Of Trevedwin, St. Burien, 1912.
Are.
Bertha Price, born at. Is it Selina?
Selina, yeah. But that's. That's a little bit, only a few miles, a couple of miles along the road from this place.
Yeah.
Yeah. That place is no longer, I don't think that's no longer there now.
She was born on the 31st of March, 1875. And William Penn Rosecrans, born at Mousel, he was born at Mousel, April the 3rd, 1875.
Yeah, but
so
same
pretty
age.
Much almost exactly
yeah,
the same age.
Yeah.
Almost in a matter of days, really.
Yeah.
31st of
March. True.
And they were married at St. Berrian, Christmas Day.
Yeah.
So
I don't think either one of them was all they weren't all that young when they were married, I don't think.
If they were born in 75 and they were married in
Married when
1907. So they were 32.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I don't think they're all that young. Yeah.
So he was already probably working by then.
Oh yeah.
He died 1960.
31 years then.
And your mother died.
Year before.
From 1959. So I was six. And they were both buried at Poole Cemetery.
Yeah.
The Poole Cemetery isn't the one next to the church, is there?
No.
The Poole Cemetery is the one up by the school.
Where the church is?
Yeah.
And then on
Turn
the left is a road that goes
yeah.
along. Well, is that road? And on the right hand side.
What's that one just next to the church?
Well, that's the
churchyard ground. But the other one was up along to the church itself.
It's
to the church, parochial council. The other one belonged to the council, like, you know. And also in the back of where that church you're on about, the other side of the road there's a what they call a cholera ground, separate, where they had the cholera years ago. They bury them separate from the rest, like, you know. Years ago. I was buried. There's another grave there belonging to the Grenfell family, and there's two or three in there. There's one there. That's Abednego Harvey Grenfell. My grandfather and grandmother are buried there, and I got a brother called James is buried there.
The same churchyard.
In the same churchyard, but not the same grave as Willie got. It's a different church, older grave, you know. That's the same. That one is the one up by the day school.
Be there married in the church of St. Berrian. Mm. Well, St. Berrian is sort of some just wife.
But I don't know, but the people suggest. I know my Aunt Katie used to go up to Pendeen, which is near enough to St. Just. And there's a family there called Warren. And I think it's the same Warrens that used to keep the cafe in Mousel years ago. And they got a shop in Penzance. And
they still are.
Restaurant.
They still are.
But I got a feeling there's a link up with my father's people all from them. I've heard I know my Auntie Katie used to go visiting them, and when I was a very small boy, she took me up Pendeen on a couple of occasions with her and Katie to see these people, and we've gone down to Pendeen Lighthouse, you know. But I always thought they was, you know, 31st cousin sort of thing. I don't think it was that close, but there was some relationship there. I think that's the only link they had left up there. Like.
What did your brother die of? James Grenfell Dial. He was
five years different to me.
But he was
only a 4 months old when he died.
That's right. He was born in February and he died in November.
Yeah.
So he was actually
only
about 8 months.
Convulsions. She had two stillborn.
Did she? As well.
But he was born during the war. First World War.
She was quite old when she had you then.
Yeah, well, she's a bit late.
I mean, if she were born 25. In 1918, 25 in 18 makes what? 41?
Well, they all wanted a daughter, see? That's what it was. They all trying to get a daughter, but nothing ever turned out.
Late baby, first he was.
Pardon?
You were late baby, weren't you?
Yeah, I was, really. Well, she lost this James, and she's so upset that they'd bite her to go in for another child. See? She thought she'd been having two sweet boys, lost a couple. But the first lot, they were lost during the early part of the First World War when they had that big German epidemic of flu. And it swept the country, and a lot of these children, women were catching this cold and killing the babies, you know. And they reckon that was a cause of a lot of that. They died all under the flu, like, you know.
Mm.
It's where they swept the country, just come over from the trenches. That's where the flu started, they reckon. during the trench warfare of the First World War. You never had no influenza before that. That wrong kind, that, but not influenza, that was something new, but the germs of the trenches and that, and back conditions.
Yeah,
Mum
said she can remember when the flu
arrived. The whole families,
they used to call it the Spanish flu, didn't they, when it first came here?
I don't know what they call
it. A lot of people died with it.
Yeah.
After the First World War.
Yeah.
Was,
the whole family.
One of her brothers, George's wife, she died with the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
She was always telling me that, you know. Because being it was a new complaint, people were popping off like flies with it.
You were quite a well-to-do family, really, in that village. Really,
you were very fortunate, really, in those days, right? In those days.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know where their money came from, but
well,
I think
in business and having the shops and that.
But to be in business in the first place, you've got to have money to buy it.
Oh yeah, collateral, like, you know. Yeah. Of course, I think my mother had a bit of money when she married. You know, because her people have been generations of farming class people. That, I think they shed a bit of money.
Your mother told me one day that she let father have the money to
buy
the house.
Yeah.
And he said he'd always put a bay window in for her. And he never did.
Well,
I've
heard her say that she'd give him 200 pounds.
When she got married.
But that was a lot of money going back.
Yeah.
100 years ago.
Probably
pounds.
It was only about £80 or £100
that
then,
Daisy. Yeah, she'd because what he had enough to buy the house, but he never enough to buy the house. Had enough to buy the shop, but not the house, you see.
That's right.
And the party was selling that house wouldn't sell that house on his own. He had to buy the premises above. Because they reckon if you never had control of the little house above, you could have a party up there, you could cause friction between neighbours. And they didn't want that. They wanted to, you know, whoever bought one would control the two premises.
Whoever had the house originally must have been into fish, mustn't they? Because, I mean, there used,
there
used to be the fish cellar outside.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they must have pulled up.
The fishermen's colleges years ago, see. There were the fishermen's colleges years ago.
I mean, that house to the left of the old house must have been a much later addition, really.
It's a bit later, yeah.
Because, I mean, you had a great big double door there, really, to get a cart into.
Yeah, but that was a dumb one.
Well, I mean, to get a cart into
cart
that,
there,
you couldn't get a cart there now, because you'd have to swing the cart round. I mean,
what they used to do then, they used to big hand carts, the one next on horse drawn, big hand carts. They used to bring all their gear up on these hand carts, and in the restaurant next door, they used to have a big door, same as we used to, you know, big door in the gap one time. And they used to, very similar to our place, and they used to, the back of their premises, this face in Renneville, they used to have net lofts up above there, you know, they used to. They turn into bedrooms later years. But
I think wasn't that net loft where Bessie used to go up to put her air in?
Well, that was a net loft.
That was
net
loft,
yeah. Well,
the back of her house.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm going up the loft to put
that's
the
right.
air in
that's
and the washing up there.
Yeah.
It was a wet day.
Yeah.
That was nets, wasn't it? A net loft.
Well, and the bottom cellar, that was where they used to cure their own fish years ago. They used to cure their own fish. And those back yards, years ago, were made with cobblestones, weren't concrete. In fact, one part of it now, if you remember, is covered in cobblestones. But all the floor used to be like that one time, and they used to go down in curves like that, with wooden inlaid on a lower level, so you could drain all the drainage away off the floor down to the drains where the fish would be cured and the stuff squeezing out, and that was to drain it away, you know, down to the sewer.
But you had drains in those days, did you?
Pardon?
I didn't know there were drains in those days.
Well, they used to have what they conduits, they called it.
Mm.
It was like a channel. Mm. You know, they ran down through this channel in the road. Now you could
run down through the streets. And
they used to run there and run out the back of the pier, down where the toilets are. Now go out there. Down the back, down where George's bathroom used to be, years ago, there used to be an open conduit there, even before, when, you know, everything was dry. You see, all conduits still there. You go down between the 2 houses between George's house and the mouse hole that was. There'd be a little channel there.
Mm.
I used to take all the drainage down years ago. But of course, latter years, all the rainwater, but earlier.
That
like
little mouse hole shop's still there.
Yeah.
I mean, that back scullery used to be dark and damp.
Oh, very dark, yeah.
The toilet and that all just whitewashed walls.
Well, that was only more or less for and fishing that years ago, see. But I'm see they turned into a scullery, the proper and all that, but it was never intended.
Yeah, but what do you think that your mother put up with that all the years she was married? That old cellar, that old sink, the old outside toilet, scrub up her washing out there.
Well,
the day she died, really.
You know what they say, that the builder's house is always the last one to get anything done because they always have to come.
What did she used to do for sheets and things like that? I mean, where did she wash them?
She used to wash them out the back. She used to have a big wooden wash tray, you know, and scrub, and that huge great mandrel. Used to mandrel it, you know. I mean, when I first went down, they used to take their sheets down on the beach and spread them out on the rocks. But after a while, as you know, they had it on the clothesline outside in the courtyard.
Well,
a bit of a job though, wasn't it? Washing,
washing
sheets by hand.
It was
to wash sheets in them days.
No, when I was a boy, no cold water taps, never had no taps. We used to have to go from our place up to the top of the hill where there was a natural spring, like a chute coming out the water, and petrol our water. I used to have to go up with
two buckets on a yoke
to collect the water. Mm. I had a kind of a square hoop made, so the buckets would not be legs, the other legs got wet. And as soon as I was old enough to carry a bucket, I'd have to do it. And my father used to go every night with two long pictures like that. And it used to be lovely fresh water, mine was pure as anything. But it was running water all the time. I had big pictures like that, like earthenware pictures. And you used to go every night and fill these two pictures up. And that used to be our drinking water. And then for domestic purposes, mother used to be washing mostly on this Monday. All Saturday afternoon, Willie and I used to carry water and take turns, and he used to go up from one end to another. I used to carry these things down there, from our house up to near enough where the day school is down there, up there in the hill in the lane. I used to carry them up, and now the whole thing was shooting out the wall. And I hold the bucket in like that, and fill it up, and then turn around and put the other bucket up, and carry it back home, and then put it in the bath or in a big.
You need a lot of water to wash sheets and things.
Yeah, we'd have gallons and gallons. Buckets and buckets on it.
You needed a few kids in those days.
And don't forget, with the toilet.
He's got bent shoulders.
And with the toilets, with the same, there's no flush toilet. You could use it for putting a bucket of water down the toilet.
Do you use seawater, is
that?
But do you use seawater?
No, I couldn't use water because that would rust the pipes and all. And it was more difficult to collect the seawater than it was to collect the fresh water, really, because the tide was out, you couldn't get the water, see? I would say, years ago, before my time, I suppose there used to be the old dry buckets, the wooden seat with a circle in the bucket underneath, see? And you used to get dumped in a pit or something like that, before my time. I would say, when we water all, I remember when the water was put in. It was that wonderful.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
Water on tap.
On tap, yeah. It's a hard life then. Hard days, man, for young fella. The thing about it is, everybody was the same, they took it all for granted. You didn't used to grumble about it.
That was just life.
And the same for lights. I mean, I was quite a boy before we had electric lights in. We had no gas, and no gas in our home. We had electric lights because, of course, there's no great cables. But when I was born, it was oil lamps. Yeah. You could all love the old light, even romantic, but, you know, my time was. Spend hours right in there at night, 12 o'clock every night, right in, all by land.
Did it seem a bit quiet?
Well, and as I said earlier, a lot went on, but people were more community feeling then, you know, you have more interest, like most of the chaps within football teams or choirs or billiards, they had two or three kind of social clubs. They had the billiard room, the liberal room. Then you had the labour room, that was another place. You had billiards and cards and library and all that. And then there was the conservative room. They all had something going on, the books would go in. Then you had a club there, an old girl from Birmingham used to keep that. And that was for youngsters up to about 14. And then one night, and then another night she would be there. And she'd have older boys. And that would be all right. You used to have all sorts of games and jigsaw puzzles and, you know, entertainment came off the street. And then one day in the week, she used to have the old age pensioners up for tea and bun fighting on the afternoon, like a bit of sewing class, like. She was quite nice, also. She was getting old. She was well on. She's
right. Do you remember we used to walk down to the old cave in Mansell?
Yeah. You still can, can't you?
I don't know. I think it's overgrown now. I don't remember whether it was overgrown when you were a boy, where they used to walk
down. Yeah, I used to walk. I remember that little lane used to go just up from the shop, didn't it? Used to walk down.
Well, down the road here, there's a partly mum and old chap Dennis, who's in our cancer, we got to know recently. Mum got talking to her one day, and
she was a nursemaid.
She got telling about, you know, how they come to meet their husband and that. She told her about her side of the story, then mum was telling her about me, see where your husband come from. And come find, she worked in Mousel. She used to work for Sandeman, the port people.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
used to live
on the top of Virginia's Hill.
Of Virginia's Hill, up near the Cave Lane. Used to live up there.
So that Cave Lane is a footpath, isn't it?
Footpath,
really?
Yeah, you used to go there.
Runs along by some houses, doesn't it?
Well, it's submerged, but it used to run along there for the meadows because it used to have flowers growing in them fields. And down where you used to go before you go down the cave, years ago, used to be a military battery there with a gun and all there, but of course it's gone there, but years by you used to have a battery there.
Isn't it up that way where there's Merlin's Rock? Isn't it Merlin's Rock or something?
Merlin's Rock.
Oh, yes, yeah, up on the headland there, that's right, yeah.
Merlin's
yeah, the battery there and the Merlin Rock is down a bit lower. Yeah. It's something like the shape of a pulpit.
Yeah,
it's
supposed to be where
like
Merlin appeared.
Yeah, yeah. They call it the Merlin, but it's shaped like a pulpit, not like on the sea.
Yeah. Isn't that where the Spaniards are supposed to have landed?
But the Spaniards are on the next point along, like just a bit further along.
Mm.
Yeah, it's probably a
bit I mean, there must still be the bit where the cave went up.
Oh,
no,
yeah, I think what it is, they had a bit of an old railings going down to get down, didn't they? The last time I was around there, I went around there one time with, I think it was old David Chins, years ago now, and all that's all rusted out, and it got dangerous, and they kind of made it bad for people to get down, you know, it got dangerous, they weren't going to run those chances, and also the head of the cave fell in. So the faith people go down there and they have a, you know, but now they've also put a lot of rubbish and all in there.
To
block it up, more or less. But
I suppose originally anyone, smugglers perhaps used to go in that cave and that through to the top.
Well, they reckon that was to lead us through from Mousel right up into the country.
Yeah, they reckon there was an opening at the top of that cave.
Yeah. Well, I've gone up underneath the road.
You know, there was a lot of smuggling going on in Cornwall.
Well, I've heard my mother say that up where she lived, up to Lamorna, by Lamorna, it's when you come up the main road, go down to Lamorna Lane, there used to be a foogie in there, what they call a foogie. And with that, you reckon there used to be an escape route up there, and the foogie was made once all the bracken, you can hardly see it, and it was cairns of rocks built up, and just picking up for a man to squeeze inside on. So if they were attacked, you could only attack you one at a time. And of course, you could hold an whole army of men there like that. And I've heard my mother say, going back to her ancestry, that she had an aunt or someone lived up there in one of the big houses, and the big houses they were, and they were all big cobblestones, granite cobblestones. And they used to have open grate and a little settle either side of the grate. And when they used to bring in this contraband, they used to put them under the old girls where the great long black skirts years ago. They used to sit on this cake like that. And the law was you weren't allowed to make a lady stand. The lady was sat, the law was you couldn't make her rise, you know. And they used to sit there, and the rest of you men used to come around, and they would sat on the back cover of Brahm or something like that. And they also had a big, on the farm, they had a big dung pile all the way from the thing, and you used to bury it underneath the dung pile, you know, well, the revenue made would go after that.
When did smuggling finish though? I mean, smuggling must have finished.
Oh, it must have been turn of the century.
Turn of the 18th century.
Yeah.
19th century.
The thing of it is, like, you look at it, there's no industry down there, and years ago, when there was no fish, there was no living.
Mm.
They was living hand to mouth, and I suppose if anything popped up, like anything, obviously there's the old smuggler right there, but a lot of it was, it's like you get now, people see a business president all along in shops and that, there was somebody go on piffle, isn't it? And you see a great big ship there, and they got loads of stuff floating in, like tins of fruit, or not definitely one tin, not tins of fruit loaded, but stuff floating in. You think, Oh, that would be handy. You'd pick it up and carry it home. Sorry.
Yeah, but don't forget, they used to lure the ships onto the rocks.
Yeah, but I'm saying, one
of the old donkey with a lamp on,
yeah,
it was a port.
That story gone on a lot, but that never been proven, really.
No, but there's never any smoke without fire, is there?
Well, there might be some truth in it, yeah.
I suppose, I mean, it's funny that both sides of your family, neither of them were in fishing, really, were they?
Not really, no. But my mother's, my father's, these uncles of my father, and that part of the family, they were seafaring men. I'm saying, there's one they're called Darnham Potter. So he went around the world 7 times sailing ships. Five masted.
But like I said, not fishermen.
Not fishermen as such, no. But they was all linked up with fishermen, because don't forget, in that day, Mike, 90% of the people in the village were either fishermen or connected with fishermen. You weren't fishing themselves. There was the fish sellers and the curing and all that sort of thing. That was the main industry. And all the houses was all for fishermen, you know. The lofts and all full of nets where all these flats are now. They're in there. They got these flats, but they'd be all full of nets years ago.
I suppose the farming that there was sort of animal farming, really.
Oh, yeah, yeah, general agriculture.
Dairy farming. I mean, when they talk about a lot of kind of wheat or.
It did. Agriculture and dairy farming.
General farming.
Yeah.
I don't suppose you have any relatives there.
Only relative I got there now is Patrick Harry.
Which is the son of
second cousin.
Son of your cousin.
He's second cousin to me.
He's a second cousin.
Isn't he second cousin?
Kissy was your cousin.
That's your mother's son.
That's
your
mother's son.
I only got up on
my
mother's side. I got Mary. It's Mary up on the farm. Mary and Manuel.
Which is the daughter of your cousin.
Ellen.
Which is a daughter of your cousin.
Yeah.
But on your mother's side again.
On mother's side again.
We haven't really got any relatives on your grandpa's side at all, have
you? Not now.
He's not one on the grandpa's side, is he? His grandmother's a grandpa.
Because it was her father's name, and mother's name was grandpa.
Well, there's Catherine, but
she's up in Shrewsbury.
Yeah, she's Kitty's daughter.
Yeah, she's another one, yeah.
Many though, isn't there, really?
Up in Shrewsbury, is she?
Up that way somewhere, yeah.
She lived on the City Isles, didn't she, or something? Didn't she live on the City Isles?
No, that's another Catherine. It wasn't Catherine, but not that Catherine. He's thinking of Catherine Gervasquez, it was. Yeah.
That's no relation.
No relation.
That's just a friend.
No.
She married a school teacher from the Sillies, didn't she?
Yeah, yeah.
They split up.
I suppose when you were a kid, all the roads in Mosul were what, just gravel, really?
Oh, yeah. I'm saying, when I was a boy, there was no tarmac at it. I'm saying, I don't know what it's like up here, it probably was here then, but I don't know, but when I was a boy, it was called Spal Stone, they call it. And that's a granite, broken up into blocks of granite about that big. And that was, the roads were, they got clay, kind of yellowy, reddy clay. And they put these, spread these stones all over the road and laid this clay dust on top of it. And then they got a big, what they call a water wagon. It's like a big barrel with a series of walls all along it. And they pull this thing along with a horse-drawn vehicle, pull it along like you would a plow, and all this water would run out, and sprinkle this dirt, Then they get a great big steam engine then, roller, to roll it down. You put up and down for hours until you squash all this thing down. It wouldn't go absolutely flat, but it all embedded one into the other, you know. And
I bet it was messy.
Terrible. It used to be, it was terrible. It was stress. And it would take ages for it to go down. And then what happened, you used to get a lot of horse-drawn vehicles and horses, most horse-drawn horses then. And if the old horses, when they get restless, they used to kick like that, see? Kick their foot into it, and I'd make a great hole in this road. And you come along on a push bike and hit one of they, and the potter would go flying through there, or sometimes you hit one of these stones and work yourself up, bang goes your tire, you know, burst your tire. It'd be terrible with a push bike. There'd be mud up all over your side. I can remember when they bought the tire mechanic to Marisol first. Up in the country, they used to have big pits in the quarry pits and that. And you used to have old chaps up there breaking the stones up with sledgehammers. You used to have a job, you used to give a name, I don't know what it was. Mm-hmm. You used to smash it up all small, but it's as big as a potato. Like. You used to walk down with the big rollers. And we used to be fascinated seeing those steam engines on joke. Go back,
it
seems
to me people were more content with their lot in those days than they are today. Today it seems everybody wants a bit more all the time, or a bit better.
Well,
in them days, they were all sort of a happy community, and they accepted their life, didn't they?
Another thing was, like I was saying, but not quite, there was more, see, down Merton now, you go in there, especially this time of year, it was dead. But it wasn't dead when I was a boy, because the churches, for one thing, used to be the social centre. They used to have concerts, make their own concerts, you know, organise groups like, you know, theatricals and things like that. And they used to have choirs, and they used to have concerts, and musical concerts in the churches. And I used to travel around different places, right?
You make your own entertainment.
You make your own entertainment. And of course, by that time, you had your own communities, about 30 people, were all friendly, because you were all in the same interest, you know.
It was nice in the old days, even in Bristol, when you get a few neighbours call round for an evening. You know, they just call in for an hour and have a chat with you, or a cup of tea, you know, and off they go again. You don't get that now.
Christmas time used to be quite enjoyable. Right, now they're going to turn the box on, that's it. But years ago, they used to, about a week, just a few days before Christmas, used to get bands going around playing Christmas carols.
When did they start Pole Feast? When was that? Was that a spring thing or an autumn thing?
Pole Feast.
Well, that was a religious thing.
But when was it? What time
in October, first Sunday in October.
It was like a harvest, really.
Yeah. It was a gathering of the clan, really. Whereas here, people get together at Christmas, but then there used to be feasting time. Every parish used to have a different feasting date. That's not necessarily harvest time, it was a certain time of the year.
Mm.
It's religious kind of thing, really. And it does through the years, you know. And they used to, if you would say you was living within a 20-mile radius, you had relatives, you'll come and gather on you. I'm sure we used to have 15 people in that cottage of a small feast, and they used to come. One lot on a Saturday, another lot on the Sunday, another lot on the Monday. You used to come on a Sunday, come out and deal tea with us. And then on the Monday was a concert in the church, cantatas or things like that, they go to that. And then on the Monday it would be a fox and hounds, fox hunting. You used to go to Paul then, used to be a meet at Paul. And opposite the churchyard there's a big quadrangle, right? And you used to have stalls and all, and they're all sort of fancy stuff for the kids and that. And as you go up there, then have all the kids buying, well, candy floss and sweets and whatever. And then the fox hunters used to meet together, like, you know, to cause a bit of a sensation. And kids on a pushback used to go then and follow them. You used to follow them around the country catching the foxes. But there's always some activity going on. But now it's dead, you know. And as I say, they go to these clubs and that. There's always something you could go in, like on a winter's day, go in the reading room, take out a paper, have a read of it, or have a game of cards. One was sponsored by the Liberal Party, and the other was sponsored by the conservatives, one by the Labour. They were more politically involved in those days than what they are today, like.
How many churches were there in
Melbourne?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that big. I noticed the big Methodist chapel the other side.
Yeah,
there's
one down the bottom of Guinness Hill. There's one up.
Poor Nick now, isn't it? They've got a big, I don't know if you, well, maybe you didn't go over there this year, but they've got a big appeal. They're asking for a lot of money. You can see that all the guttering is rotted and they need a new roof.
Yeah.
And, you know, several thousand.
I love that church.
What's
that?
Wesley
Chapel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shabby now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beautiful chapel that was. Well, that just for the war, you had all the angels all around. You see, all that was.
Yeah.
And that was all done up with white and gold, gold leaf paint. You know, all done up. Beautiful.
All the gates on there are all rotted. You know,
yeah, the neighbour put up years ago when Arnold Rocket lost his wife. He put that up in memory of her, you know.
Yeah.
I got around more.
Okay.
Yeah, all the ornamental gates.
Obviously, it just hasn't been painted enough, really. Because
the last time I was painted, I painted it.
Yeah,
I painted it a couple of times before that. I don't think since Arnold's gone, that's it.
If you look at Mousel, though, you can see the kind of, you know, the old part of the pier halfway along, and that little, you know, that little bit where they sell the sea urchins.
Yeah, yeah.
That little corner is
the
original Mousel, isn't it? You can see from, you can just see by the, you know, that it really is the original. And like the bit where the house is really is, it's more, much more modern. You can see it's much more modern.
Yeah,
and that's an expansion.
Yeah, yeah. That bit there by the wharf, the one, the where you got your picture in your lobby at Brockhurst. That's the original part of it. That pier
there.
Corner there. Yeah, but that part was extended three different times. If you look at the construction of that closely, you find there's three different types of building there.
Yeah.
You know, different types of stonework. Now as you get towards the harbour mouth, you find more modern.
It's more sophisticated.
More sophisticated. The other one is just rough handling because they never the appliances, but then later on they had a bit more appliances.
Those little cottages on the wharf, you know, they're really small.
Oh, they are.
And they've got little courtyards behind them.
Yeah. Well, if you go up, as you go along there, you find opening. You go, there's quite a yard up there.
Yeah.
Well, that used to be a boat yard. They used to bring their boats up there and repair them. And the back of our shop come out into that, used to. Our workshop used to come into that yard. In fact, we used to bring our carts up there to repair. But because it changed hands, and we lost her right away at that yard.
So when your mother came to Mousel, you said she used to stay opposite the workshop.
Where Ivy used to live.
The same, eh?
Same way.
History repeated itself there, really.
Yeah. Her aunt lived in there. And do you remember Everett Love, the old fisherman, Everett Love?
Yeah, I do.
Well, he used to be a cousin of my mother. That was my mother's first cousin, Everett.
Mother's first cousin, Everett Love.
And his mother lived there, and his name was Love, and his father was a shoemaker. And where Ivy's house was, where she had her bathroom, that was the old shoemaker's shop.
It's funny, really, the old shop, the design of it, because it's got like an outside stairway, hasn't it?
Yeah. Next door to the shop.
Yeah.
Next door. Yeah, but that one to the left, he goes up and he got a little porch up here.
That's right,
Well, that used to be the pilot's cottage. Used to be a pilot's residence there, and in the days of old sailing boats, you used to look at it as a lookout, and you could look out all over the bay, and they called it Pilot's Cottage for years, I don't know if it still is or not, but there's changers living there now.
A bit farther up is the sort of what used to be the Pilchard Press.
From underneath, where they got that statue on about, he lived in the top story, which was the Pilot's Cottage, but below was the fish cellars, and used to be owned by on the other fish cellar, used to be owned by where that taffy is. And from the other side, they've got steps that side as well, isn't there?
Yeah.
Well, that step leads you up into used to be the flower loft there. But that's in the residence now. That's been turned into residences. And underneath used to be another owner, which owned another fish yard. He went from the shop then, right down to the wharf. You're right now, like a thief.
But that bit up from the toilets, that must be quite modern as well.
Right.
Is it the Pyrenees?
Oh, but that's a bit more modern.
That's more modern, isn't it?
More modern.
More on outside,
yeah.
Isn't it?
The Pyrenees. where the gardens are out the front.
That's right, yeah. That would be more modern.
Yeah. But when you go out a bit further again, to the end of that garden, you'll find there's a little old rough steps that leads down to a beach there, and another two or three steps that lead into a little cottage is on their own.
Yeah.
Smaller than a cottage. Now, they used to be salt ponds years ago, where they used to make their own salt years ago by up there, and all that.
Well, just evaporating seawater.
Yeah. And the cottages was built for the workers, which, you know, worked there. And right on the very end used to be a blacksmith shop. But of course, that's gone now. But I've gone out there when I was undertaking. We never have any fire in our shop. We never have any fire in the bird shop. And when we come to melt the pitch, I used to have to go out there to warm the pitch, and I go out there in winter at night, Mike, blowing a gale, about 80 mile an hour, old Dover would be rattling, you know. I'd be out there on my own about 2 o'clock in the morning, only about 15 years of age then. And then I'd be back then, and the pitch was still off.
Why weren't you allowed any fire in the workshop?
Under the fire regulations.
Too much wood.
In fact, they had a fire there one time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Was there a Mousel Fire Brigade or what?
No, Penzance Fire Brigade.
By the time. How did you get a message across to him?
Well, years ago, everyone used to turn to him and give you a hand, like, you know. And see what happened then, the workmen turned to him. The old chap burnt his moustache, the old father burnt his eyebrows. But luckily, they had a lot of old coats in that there, and that beat it down, because the workshop would be full of shavings in those days. Trying to put it out.
I suppose all the oils for the paints as well, yeah. If it went up, you'd never. I wonder who owns that workshop now. I don't think it's a permanent residence, is it?
No, I think the people who got the pallet cottage, she came there years ago, but I was down there. Karen Nemner, she came from the stranger, she came into town, she bought that cottage, and she bought the flower loft next door, bought that, and then she was around buying this one and buying that one and buying that one. And she was down there one day and she was complaining about all the visitors come, what they're doing, you know. Somebody said, well, they sold all the property, you've been there selling all their houses to strangers, haven't you? There were no locals here now, they're all strangers. And then he goes out exactly the same, he's on his rapture, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You don't know, I mean, again, you know, got no idea who owns the house now, the old house.
Well, I think she had bought it. I think what I can gather, she did buy it.
The house, not the workshop.
The workshop. She bought the workshop. She got the cot.
But that just seems to be rented out. It's holiday lets, that workshop.
I think it is, yeah. I think she lives in the bigger premises now, where the flower loft used to be, that's overlooking the bottom of the wharf. She lives in that premises where they got the two gable ends looking over the wharf. You know, there's a gable ends on the end. That premises, she lives in there.
But in the old house, again, I don't know if anyone...
I don't know who got that.
I don't know if anyone actually lives there.
It's changed hands there, I don't know about
it. Or whether it's just rented as summer lets, really.
I think it's just summer lets, I think. It's like the Mrs. Jenkins, I up with that next one. That's all summer lets, see. He moved out and went to live in Torquay, and they... Another party come there, and then they lived in for a year, and then they started to go out to summer let, didn't they? I don't think it's full residence now.
Sounds like everyone used to be related to each other, really, one way or another.
Well, they used to be years ago. Yeah, they did. In fact, a lot of Cornwall is that. A lot of Cornwall. But don't forget, you only go back to 1800, and you had a job to get out of Cornwall. You never, you know, you would. I went to the train. The train was only 150 years ago, and it didn't go as far as Penzance then.
I would have thought in all these years, there was a bit of kind of like in a village like Mousel, there'd be quite a bit of interbreeding, really, wouldn't there?
Oh, I think it was.
Because if you stayed in the community, if you grew up and stayed in the community and you wanted to get married,
then
the chances are you're going to marry someone else from the immediate village.
Especially these fishermen families. You find their interbred, they're not the fishermen, you know, they're on the same boat.
Second cousins and cousins, married cousins.
Not very healthy, is it, really?
Not really.
I would say, with me, they come from, we diverse, set up a bit, but some of the families you find are, you know, shouldn't get the relatives around like that. That's how my mother used to find, you know, down there when she was there first, as a young woman. She was a foreigner, you know. She wasn't American woman, like.
When you used to talk about, as a kid, going up on the farm and working up on the farm, that was her parents?
Yeah, but her brothers.
Her brothers?
Yeah.
Where was that?
That was Uncle Joseph.
Yeah, but where?
At the Beecher bedroom.
That was in
the bedroom. I spent many.
So where she was brought up.
Yeah, that was a very.
So that's where he used to go.
Which farm was Uncle James Edwin's then?
That was Treen.
Treen. Did you ever work on that one?
No, I never went over there because he had a family of six girls. I never went over there.
So you was with Uncle Joseph mostly.
And so that was her brother.
That was her brother.
Yeah, the Treen.
Brother. Yeah. The one that.
And she had lots of brothers and sisters.
She had three brothers.
Three brothers, but she was the only sister.
Yeah, yeah. She had another sister, one sister died.
Edwin and
Harold.
Harold
was an organ builder. And went to live in Plymouth.
And they're all their names was Prowse.
Prowse, yeah.
It's a funny name, isn't it? Prowse.
Because they came down to visit, didn't they, one day
while
we were there.
Yeah, yeah.
And your Willie went out the back and he said to me, go on in there and see to that lot in there. He said, I don't really know them. But it was his relations, not mine. And he stayed out in that cellar, out that back cellar, all the time they were there. Wouldn't come in, would he, Bert?
Yeah. Not very sociable.
No. Mother was pleased to see him, though, because it was her relations, really. Yeah. Prowse's, see?
Yeah,
it was her brother.
Yeah. And his children, like, in their family. Obviously, there's still some there now.
Actually, that woman, there was a woman and her grandchild and her son and his wife, right? What happened, that elder woman, that was my mother's niece. That was a daughter to my Uncle Harold.
Yeah.
And these two younger persons with his son, with her son, and
his
the wife.
Wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they came down to Plymouth, you know, but I had seen this Hilda in the corner for years. She'd be a cousin of mine, I suppose, wouldn't she? Yeah, would be a cousin of mine. Yeah, she would be a cousin of mine. First cousin, because she'd Harold's eldest daughter.
Yeah.
So we took her around, didn't we?
Yeah.
In fact, the following year they came to Merrill again. Thought we would be there, but we weren't there that year. Called again, didn't she?
Extensive network, isn't it, when you start spreading out.
Did you find like a lot that was a...
I suppose if anybody really want to go back further, you could sort of find out through these societies, couldn't you?
You could probably go quite... I think the real real sources, if you're finding out, is churches, you know, really.
Yeah.
Well, if you want to find information, you go to St. Burien Church.
Yeah.
St. Burien Church.
Yeah.
And the Wesleyan Methodist Church at St. Burien, that would have a lot of my father's people. And my mother's
your father's people.
My mother's people. My father's people would get the most information there from Paul Church in Paul Village. And the Methodist Church down in Merville, but I think most of their people that are born and buried within are in Paul's Church, I think.
But you say your grandfather came from St. Just.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
So you must have been
what ancestry there. I don't honestly know. I'm not in touch with them. And Willie would know more about these people than I do because.
Well, you can't ask Willie, he's gone.
No, I see he would do because he knew them. I didn't know. No, not one of them knew.
12 years between
Yeah,
them,
he knew both of them, see? Both sides.
Really know the name of your grandfather, really, do you? You don't know your father's name.
Well, I think...
You think it was Penrose.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You don't know.
Yeah.
But he must have been born in St. Just, or grew up in St. Just.
Yeah, it's all right there, yeah.
Because St. Just isn't very...
Well, it's a mining area.
Yeah.
Mining area. There's a lot of Grenfells. There used to be a lot of Grenfells in Cornwall, especially around St. Giles and St. Brian, with a lot of Grenfells in St. Brian, too.
I've noticed a lot of Grenfells.
Yeah, a lot of Grenfells down there.
But that's what, this is what Patrick's written here, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
It's William. That must have been your grandfather. Cats, isn't it?
Yeah.
He was married to Catherine Harvey.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
But that they he's put up here, William Penrose. I don't know what he means by that.
See, that's what he's trying to find out, I think. Well, I don't know. Oh, that's by him there. Because, is this on my mind? See, William and Catherine are Harvey.
Which are your grandparents, weren't they?
I'd be my grandparents, yeah.
William and Catherine must be your grandparents.
I don't know, that's
anyway, Patrick's supposed to be going further into all this. He said when he gets more details, he said us.
Well, yeah, I thought if I go down there sometime, I could, you know, go see him, see what he's got.
Yeah, you know, if you'd have said you were going that way, I could have given you his address.
Well, I didn't have time. But I did think another
time. This guy here, so he's not too far down.
I thought maybe, you know, I might go sometime out of season, you know, when you're not, when the weather's nice, you feel more like just sitting around on beaches
that's
and that,
right,
you know,
yeah.
But I thought I might go out sometime, you know, out of season.
Got this complaint in his eyes, he's slowly gone blind, is Patrick. Chris's mother had very bad eyes.
I say, much more, and he won't.
See, you got your James Burkle and Audrey, well, he wanted your surname, Taylor, really, didn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I don't understand this bit. He's talking there about your great grandfather, isn't he?
Yeah.
Which he's also calling William. He's matching it with Penrose, so where the Penrose comes in, I don't
know.
Well,
I've got a feeling that Penrose is probably his wife's name.
His
wife's surname.
Yeah, his surname, but you don't know her first name.
No, I don't know her first name.
He must have gone into it quite a bit to find that.
Yeah.
I suppose he's got information.
Well, apparently he had a conversation with his mother some years ago about it. Didn't delve in it for quite a while, apparently. And I think his mother would be no more proud than I did, really.
Yeah.
She's dead now.
She's dead now, yeah.
So, would Patrick been sort of, perhaps he might have been writing to churches or something, he might have found out a bit more by now.
Mm.
Might be. Seemed quite keen on it.
I mean, this is only one branch of his interest, really, isn't it?
Well, could anyone go get it from Somerset House?
Well, yeah, but records only go back so far. If you're talking about your father being born in
1800.
Well, he was born in 1875. That means your grandfather must have been born mid 19th century. Well, probably earlier.
Yeah,
you know, about 18. So if you're talking about your great grandfather. You're talking about 1800.
Yeah.
I think that's probably about the limit. The church records.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. But not everything goes into Somerset House.
Yeah.
You know, it's after a certain date. You know. That's why they say go to church records.
Yes, I say, where you would find it perhaps in a church.
But the problem is that church records, you know, there've been fires.
Yeah,
there's
a lot of churches around up
there.
Yeah. Well, they keep the records. I mean, the records always stay on where they exist.
One church was burnt, wasn't it, one time with the Spaniards?
Yeah.
I was looking at that picture album you've got there, and you've got all sorts of names. You've got Lug and Man and.
Yeah, that's right. Well, they're Man. That's my.
What picture, Mike?
That's
Hello.
My.
Oh,
Man. I think Man is my mother's grandmother on her mother's side. Because I heard her say that her grandmother.
What's that?
Her grandmother was a man before she's married, and I can never understand what she's on about. See?
Her grandmother
was
a man.
Before she married.
Yeah, man.
I could never understand what she was talking about. I'll have a look at that again before you put it away.
Yeah,
I see a lot of them in there. I never read you like when what my mother said.
But this is, what was it? What's Ivy sent this up.
Yeah, that's my mother's, isn't it? That's my grandfather. That's my mother's father.
That's your mother's father. You can see that.
James Prowse. James Prowse.
Joseph Prowse is your...
That's Joseph Prowse when he's a young man.
You can see the...
That's Ellen's father.
These are all brothers.
Yeah, and that's Edwin. Her second brother.
You can see by the small eyes.
The eyes, isn't it?
The long nose. There's another one there.
Right? I think that's my mother's mother.
Your mother's mother?
Our grandmother, I'm not sure.
Or your mother's...
What's it said there?
Bert's mother's mother.
Yeah, I think it's right. Mother's grandfather. The mother, yeah. I got feeling...
So before she was born, her
she
name
was man.
Before she
I
was
think.
Married, her name was Man.
I think so, yeah.
And Arthur Prowse.
Yeah, Arthur that's Prowse. A cousin of mine. He was a schoolmaster.
It's the eyes, isn't it?
The small eyes and the long nose.
Ernest Prowse.
That's the one he's on about. That's the first cousin of mine. That was about getting on a bit.
What's her name?
Hilda. She was the eldest daughter of my Uncle Harold.
That's on father's side then.
That's on my mother's
side. Mother's side, yeah.
That's
ever heard of.
God. I've ever seen him.
Oh, he was on the grandpa's side, wasn't he?
He's on the Prowse's side. No,
Prowse's side?
Yeah,
he's
on
the,
yeah.
He's dark, isn't he?
Yeah.
It's like a
real stylized picture, that, isn't it? Mm. Mildred
That's
Prowse.
Mildred. That's the eldest daughter of Uncle Edwin Prowse.
Edwin.
That's her eldest daughter.
That's your mother.
Yeah.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it?
The eyes, isn't it? Soft eyes. That one you don't know.
No, that I think that was a cousin somewhere, and I belonged to my mother. That's Ellen when she's younger.
No, you can see that, can't you?
Yeah.
That's Ellen's mother.
That's
Minnie.
Mother.
Minnie Prowse. And this one here is my Uncle Harold. That's my brother's eldest brother.
Yeah,
Uncle Harold Prowse, and that's his wife, and of course, and that's him there again. I got a feeling that's his daughter was one of them too.
Miriam.
Miriam, that's their daughter.
Yeah, you can see that.
And that's Prowse you saw just now with the mayor's wig on. He's a schoolmaster up in London, but Moravian School or something they called it. My mother's in that group there.
My mother, it's a bury of Wesleyan Chapel.
Yeah.
Isn't it nice with all the little butchers on?
Yeah.
Huh?
Who's that then?
That's a cousin. Man? That's a...
Yachting man?
Yeah, Darren Farmer, seafaring man. He was a son to my mother's aunt.
He's that lot.
He was out in Africa. That was taking out in Africa. That one there, that's a sister to the one you just saw previously. Sister to him.
Right.
But she's deaf and dumb. She had meningitis when she was a young girl and made her deaf and dumb.
Yeah. Mildred Prowse.
Yeah, when she's a baby, yeah. Now these here.
That's your mother's mother again.
I don't know what that is.
Same one,
this is Ben Prowse when he's a young man. Now this here, one is Everett's mother, another one is my grandma. One is Everett's mother, and one is my grandmother.
On my mother's side.
What's the guy on there, right?
Aunt Anna Lugg.
Yeah, that's Everett's mother.
So that would be Anna. That would be
my
your mother's
aunt.
Your mother's aunt.
Yeah.
And Zena Prowse.
That
would be your mother's aunt.
Yeah, that's true. They're two sisters. Tall, they were.
Yeah.
And that's another. That's Minnie Harvey.
Yeah.
Now she was a cousin to my father.
Yeah. And that's your mother's.
That's the one who died
when my father was five.
Father's mother.
She was the one who died when Benigo
was born.
Born.
Yeah. Yeah.
So she must have lived in Mousel.
Yeah, well, she's a murder girl. Mm. Yeah.
So her name was Harvey.
Yeah.
So she got married and she was sleeping. So that's really your grandmother.
Yeah.
So what steely eyes she got.
Yeah.
She used to have a big portrait of her on the wall in the old house in Mousel, if you remember.
No, I don't.
Yeah, in the front room.
Looked firm, didn't she?
She looks.
In a gilt frame.
She looks quite young there, really, didn't she?
Yeah.
Going up to the nines, really.
Well, of course, she wasn't very old. Well, my father was only five, look.
Yeah.
I don't know who that is. I said, look again.
Seems like that's who's that bird?
He's a Prowse. Arthur Prowse, he's a cousin of mine. He teaches a place called Moravian or something in London. He was a mayor up there for a while. He spent his whole life school teaching.
He looks like a school teacher, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Remember it all, isn't it, really?
I was trying to think myself when I was down there. I was trying to think. I remember you telling me different things, but I couldn't remember. I remember you saying how your father had bought the house. I mean, I suppose really when he became a craft tradesman, there wasn't really. You just took on the job that your father did, really. I mean, that's how you learned, really. You learned because your father taught you.
Well, yeah, Sir Pius the Pension, like, you know.
I didn't realise he was born and bred in Mosul. Somehow it was his father that went to Mosul.
Yeah. See, the only relatives I had in Mosul really was on my father's side. There were no relatives on my mother's side in Mosul. They were all distributed around. But that's our that peace time. We used to get all these villages coming from my mother's side. I used to drive up in the day before Gorshov. We used to drive up with our cabs, you know. In that courtyard, we used to come in and have to drive in with the horse and cab. Take the horse out, take them down the ship in and the stables of the ship in. The old pots, and used to drive up with the carriages that they do with, on the pots here. People used to think the father used to come with their breeches on and their polished leggings and all, you know.
Well, it was the better part of town, really, wasn't it? I remember you said before, it was uptown, wasn't it? And then downtown.
Well, we got beyond the
I suppose it was working class down the other end, wasn't it?
Honestly, but you got, if you were a downtowner, it was like a new dog. A new dog comes to town. You pass the ship in, and they used to get done over. Or you could have a pull in the car, and you used to go down the end of the piers, one on the south pier, one on the north pier, and start chucking lumps of grass, tubbins of one another, you know, across the harbour, like, you know. Like a stone over, things like that.
Class division.
Yeah. Upturners and downturners.
So you were saying earlier the communal ovens used to be one where they're where the lobster pot is. One round the back of
one of the ship at the back of the one in the Kegwin Arms.
Yeah.
And one in Commercial Road, that's up by the Salvation Army.
Around the back by the ship inn, you
say? Oh, one by the shop, by Ulster's shop. Yeah. The Ulster shop. About 4 or 5 years ago. And I've not how many fish sellers were there years ago. I mean, these fish sellers used to employ 50, 60 girls every time. They made a lot of work, see? You see, they'd all these doing these fish by hand in those days, right? You used to put them in a Cooper's keg, the round barrel, Cooper's bed, they call it. And you used to put all the fish in radial fashion around like that, with their heads all on their side, right?
Yeah.
And they put them in, and then they put them under like bottle jacks would be. But that's like in our house home, where in the back cellar used to come down like that, and the wall used to go underneath. Well, that's where they used to put the barrel underneath, and the bottle jack up underneath that, near the top of it, down onto the fish. You used to have a round disc of board put on top of the Cooper's keg, and you used to put the crab on, and that used to press the fish down.
And when it was done, what did they take it to the market?
It was all shipped abroad, going to Italy. Like
it would be shipped out from there.
Yeah. Part of it was shipped abroad, Italy, mostly. Of course, now everything's out of the tin, obviously. The Italians don't eat it, it's quite not there, but they did. But a strong brine, mind, you put in strong, coarse salt. And they used to take it, when they come off the boat, you used to take it up into these fish cellars, and they had big concrete like chambers, like spats, down into the floor. And it'd be about 8-10 feet deep and about 10 foot square, each one of these. and they'd be full up with fish, because they reckon that they used to catch about, just after the war, First World War, they were catching 81 million fish a week. They reckon the sea was teeming with pushers, but now you can't find a pusher, they don't ever see any down there now. So all trawled up, see? They've been trawled up the source.
Can you remember as a kid what you used to eat? I mean, did you eat a lot of fish?
Not a lot, not really.
What was the sort of thing you used to have?
No, I used to have a lot more than we do now, like, really. Yeah. But I think the fishermen used to come home with a meal of take up after the market or something, you know. Fishermen used to go out.
Mm.
And of course, when they're at sea, they used to eat the fish a lot. But the trouble is then, you used to get a lot of boils, sores.
Really, too much fish?
Too much matter in there, and the fishermen got a lot of matter in it. And that gives them boils.
Try it again.
Well, not a controlled diet, really. Too much one sort.
Did you have a vegetable market or something?
There? Always down coming around, you know, on the carts.
They'd sell things off.
Local grow. Like. Chap come around a big wagon like the sun. Taters, onions, cabbages. He's great to get served, you know. But Manny, you know Manny used to do that.
Did he?
Yeah, he used to have a lorry come around. Get out of here, get out of here, go out back and get served.
Well, I remember when I used to first come down here, your mother used to say, there's Sleeman down on the corner, take his basket down for me, Audrey.
Yeah.
And get me some potatoes and some turnips and some carrots and a bit of cabbage, you know.
Then across it, used to have what they call jousters. You used to call them jousters, but what they used to get, blokes used to go and collect, buy the fish in the market or all the fishermen, and go around the countryside, either in Merton or way out in the countryside, or the villages outside, like Paul and things like that, selling fish. They go away all day selling fish, you know. There was one of them that I went off with when I was up with the gypsies. I went off with the gypsies, up with the gypsy caravan, and I was missing ever so long, and my mother comes 6 o'clock, I'm very old, I hadn't turned up for tea, and she wondered where I got away, made inquiries, and they said, Bertie went out playing with the gypsy boy this afternoon, and he'd gone up for a ride in the car. And Grandma Darcy got nervous anyway, before she made any too much fuss. This picture of Jouster come home from Newlyn with me up in the front of the car. Where he'd been. Oh, he said, over here, he said, and this old gypsy chap pulled me up and he said, are you going back to Mousel? He said, yeah, he said, take this youngster back with him. Quite rebellious of death.
Kidnapped by the gypsy.
One of these, no.
Fascinated,
no.
I expect. You
proper, oh, right. Well, they'd all right, they'd love you, they'd
come
back.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah, looking at a picture of one of these here just now.
They're steady,
that
thing's going.
I thought it was just now, I thought it might remind me of it. But it was not, all fun at my side, really functional.
Might
you want
me to do something to eat?
Well, Lynn said she was going to do
something. She is, so that's all right.
She'd be a bit offended if I...
Well, that's okay. Yeah,
in fact, I should go, really, because I said... I should go, really, because I
well,
said...
Well, that's what I was just thinking,
yeah,
a bit of time.
I said to her...
Well, I'll carry on with that tomorrow.
Yeah.